This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another weird episode of the Doxcast. I am your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the Keymaster himself. Mr. Richard Early. Rich, how are you doing tonight?
Who are you going to call, Josh? Who are you going to call?
I am going to call our special guest.
Eric Burnham.
That's
Eric,
the one.
How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. Doing great.
Eric is coming to us live on Skype from...
From the middle of Minnesota, Brainerd.
Good old Brainerd. So
that's it.
One of my employees is from Baxter, so he grew up there.
Oh, yeah,
so.
About 5 minutes down the road. Sure.
Yep. So if you know the Serranis at all, there you go. We got two other hosts with us, Darren Gregson.
Hello.
And Brad Meixner.
That's me.
But this is, so Eric, I told you what my first question was going to be, but I'm going to lie. What do you do? Eric is another working comic professional, and give us just a rundown of what you're doing right now, Eric.
Oh, sure. Okay, well, 99% of what I'm doing right now is writing, which I broke into the industry writing and drawing, so I guess this is a nice I don't know if the word is the knock on my art skills, but I'll take what I can get. So I'm writing Ghostbusters for IDW. I'm working right now on the upcoming crossover with all the characters who have ever worn a proton pack. That's called Crossing Over. I'm working on that. I'm doing a co-writing of Red Sonja with Amy Chu. And I just turned in another script for Dynamite that isn't in solicits yet, so I can't talk about it yet. But it's an interesting something that I wouldn't have thought anyone would think of me for, so it's kind of entertaining for that. Then I've also done a little bit of Ninja Turtles here and there and have a trade coming out pretty quick in that thing. But for the most part, the biggest thing that I've done, the thing that I've done most often, and the thing that I've done most consistently is Ghostbusters. And I love it. It's my favorite job I've ever had. So it still excites me 6 years later.
Is it Rescue Rangers and Jim and the Holograms? Is that your project? Okay.
That's the crossover no one asked for.
Yeah. If only.
Yeah.
I mean, I could sell that to middle-aged women who were the right age in the 1990s. Boom. It would be done.
And furries as well.
Okay.
The Rescue Rangers portion of it.
So, we're going to have lots of questions about all that stuff, but the first question I want to ask you, and this is very important, when you were a young lad... What was the first comic you ever read?
Okay, I cannot remember the first one that I ever straight up read, because when I was a kid, my dad collected comics, so there was a ton of comics from that. My grandpa had comics that he would buy for the grandkids or for, to amuse himself, and I would get some of the casts off that he didn't keep in the, for the grandkids or visiting pile. So there was a ton. I remember flipping through them. I remember drawing in in a copy of Uncanny X-Men with a jumbo purple crayon. I remember that. But when I was about 5 years old, our house went up in a fire. We lost everything. And the first thing that I was given by my grandpa, he went to his little, his stack of For the Grandkids comics, and he gave me a copy of Avengers Annual number 6. It was my first possession after losing everything. And I still have the tattered remnants of that comic. 35 years later, and I kept it with me, and it was like a security blanket. It went everywhere, and I read and reread until it fell apart, and then I read the shards, and I've got a page and a half left of the backup story, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening to the Vision now, but I still have the comic, and that was the thing. It really solidified my love for comics, because, like I said, it was the first possession I had after losing everything, so it meant a lot to me. It meant a lot more to me because it came from my grandpa. And, I told that story. I tell that story a lot. A few years ago, I was doing an interview with somebody and told that story, and a couple of weeks later, they sent a copy to my editor at IDW and forwarded it along. So I have a full copy, and it was just the sweetest gift I've gotten. And that comic means a lot to me. It means more than the story. It means more than the art involved is just, I mean, it was a solidifying moment in many ways. And I mean, it's a fun comic, but it was just, you know, I mean, it was just a huge moment for me because I had something again after losing everything. And, you know, that sticks when you're a kid. So.
Yeah, no, that's an awesome story. And I mean, that makes sense. You know, it's funny how often there's this tie between what happens in your life and especially these sort of like traumatic or dramatic moments, you know, and mm-hmm. and often to this passion. And in our case, comics. It could be any number of things, but for us, comics. So, I mean, my follow up, and then I'll let these guys ask questions after that, too, is like, take me through like, OK, you're 5 years old. You're in love with comics. Like, when did you know you wanted to write comics and how did you eventually, you know, turn that into getting a job writing comics? How did that work?
This is something my mom likes to tell me. When I was around that age, I told her that I either wanted to be a magician or I wanted to make comics because these are, you know, realistic goals for a child. I thought that they made sense to me, and she just kind of, you know, rolled her eyes and she still laughs about it. I don't have the proper coordination for magic, so I moved on to back to the comics. But I knew from them because I liked reading. I liked writing. I wasn't very good at it at five. I loved drawing. Comics had writing. Comics had drawing. Therefore, it crystallized early, and, you know, it floated in and out as I grew. I always loved reading comics, but it floated in and out as a possibility of something that I could ever do. But it was always in the back of my head, and then eventually, you know, thanks to connections I was able to make via the internet, because I've always lived in the middle of nowhere, I was actually able to get a chance to make some comics and then just start rolling the hill upward and eventually turn it into an actual job and, you know, kind of laugh with my mom about it. Look what I did, Mom. I made it. I pulled it off. And she rolled her eyes. Yeah, yeah. You didn't think I could. I know. You didn't. And then she changes the subject. But it's something that I pull off her every so often when I talk to her that you know, I've wanted this forever and figured out a way to make it happen. It's kind of ridiculous when you think about it. Because, you know, I mean, this is the kind of thing that people grow out of or realize that it is such a specialized industry that there are a lot of people who want to do it and not a lot of openings to, you know, to do it to the point where you can, you know, pay bills with it. It's the kind of thing I should have given up with, you know, gone off to do anything else. But I didn't, and here I am, and, you know, it makes me giddy thinking about it. So giddy I had to take a drink of water and listen to Dead Air, but I
no, that's okay.
It's, it's not a long story, but it is a deeply pleasant one.
Yes.
So it's my, I mean, I know this already, but you're an artist as well. Mm-hmm. So I believe your first early comics, you were drawing and writing them, and so, you know, what were they, and why did you sort of just follow the path of just being the writer? What happened to kind of?
Well, that's a long roundabout story. Let's see, how can I stack the blocks on this? So I started writing a little bit more in high school, and I was writing plays. Or screenplays or short stories to amuse myself. After I graduated from high school, I moved down to the Brainerd area and started writing. I'm like, oh, hey, cool. I discovered the internet, and I discovered comic book message boards, and I discovered fan fiction. So I started writing, just, you know, making up stories, not the kind where, you know, Superman should not have parted his hair this way in panel 3 of Superman 742, you know, whatever. So we're going to do it the other way. No, I didn't do that kind of fan fiction. I didn't do the, you know, okay, the excuse for porn fan fiction. I did the, okay, I'm just going to take a character name and make up some stuff and go. And that's how I started writing for an audience. And at this, while I was doing this, I was working in radio. I was working for Lake Region Radio here. Doing, you know, running boards for sporting events and you know, doing talk on AM radio and occasionally, you know, working on helping out on remotes or what have you, just, you know, simple stuff. So I had a lot of time to sit around and not do anything while the programs were playing. Excuse me. And I so I wrote. And I got to know people while I was doing this writing. Eventually, I got laid off from the radio station and started spending even more time on the internet, even more time on these comic book message boards, even more time chatting with the people I met on these boards and talking about comics. And there was a lot of talk, the typical talk that you hear from comic book fans. This sucks. This is terrible. They're going in the wrong direction. I could do better than that. Eventually, after a couple of nights of the I can do better than that type of conversation over whatever stories they were talking about, I can't remember which company or which storyline set it off, somebody said, well, why don't we try? Why don't we put our money where our mouth is? So we did. We came together and we put together an anthology, the Shooting Star Comics Anthology. I had 8 pages in that to do whatever I wanted, and I was the only person in this group who didn't have a pre-existing character, so I had to come up with something. And I made up a silly character. I just started sketching until a face came. I came up with a pun for a name. His name was Nick Landime, which put together fast, Nick Landime, yes. And and I wrote a short little story that was just a guy who gets into a weird supernatural incident, and then at the end of the story he's talking to somebody, and maybe he was making the whole thing up and maybe he wasn't. It you know, the story doesn't say. But I mean, that's what I did for my 8 pages. Everybody else had you know, superhero or pulp, or there was a Western in there, fantasy. I was the only one who had a comedy. And the anthology actually did pretty good, all things considered. Anthologies never do well, but it did okay. So we said to ourselves, that was a great experience. We should do more. We set up a company. Some of us, not all of us. So we set up a small publishing company, Shooting Star Comics, yes. And we did another 5 issues of the anthology. And we did a couple of miniseries. One of them was Tom Waltz's first work, Tom Waltz being my editor on Ghostbusters. That's how I met him, which will come into play later. One of them was a one-shot that I did with Nick Landime, and it was done at the worst possible time. I was, by this time, I had found another job. I was working retail, and they said, okay, you can do this one-shot comic if it can be 100% done by this date, which left me 25 pages to draw while working retail in the month of December. It did not turn out well. You can look at it and see, wow, I see exactly how much time he had to devote to the pencils here. I was working 50 to 60 hours a week, and then the rest was going into the drawing as fast as I can. And like I said, the story is still pretty funny, but those pencils are pretty rough. And anyway, that came out, and again, it got a decent reaction for the humor. Tom Waltz was a big fan, and he had, as I said, did his first miniseries through Shooting Star, The Children of the Grave, was talking to IDW about doing it as a collection. And that wound up turning into a job for him. As he got along so well with the IDW guys, he eventually became an editor. He was working part-time on the Gene Simmons House of Horrors anthology. And he said to me, he goes, hey, you want to pitch something, go for it. Because when you think of horror, you think of the guy who did the comedy stories. I pitched a few ideas, and he liked one. He said, hey, this is great, this is good. I want you to draw it, too. You know, I mean, my art style's not really... It's not really a horror art style. It's pretty cartoony. He goes, no, that's what's great about it. That's what's awesome. They'll never see it coming. Okay. So I'm drawing this story. And in the middle of the story, I have a forced move. So that kind of knocked me off my game trying to draw it. There was other delays, some that I had to do with and some that I did not. But again, the story, the art was, it was just okay. It was not terrible. It was not as bad as the Rush during Christmas one, but it was, I learned at this point that I clearly need more time than is reasonable for a comic book artist to draw something that looks good enough to print. As a sequential story, I can still knock out sketches happily. But you know, if you're going to start asking for backgrounds, well, I'm going to need a little more time. That's what I learned, and that's what I found out. But it went well, and again, people got a kick out of the story, got a kick out of the writing, got a kick out of the humor that was still in the horror story. So Tom asked again. He goes, "Okay, I've got something else for you. You wouldn't have to draw this one, and it is a tie-in to a toy that's not out yet. That's kind of like Pokemon, but not." And would you be interested?
Wow, that's a good pitch.
Am I getting paid? Yes, you're getting paid. I'm interested. So I took that job. And that was called Nanovore. And one of the notes I remember from Nanovore, it was one of my favorite notes, is I had a joke in there. It was a Scarface joke. And they said, kids would never understand a Scarface reference. And I'm thinking, I just saw a 12-year-old renting the Scarface PlayStation 2 game. They're going to get it. But I took out the reference, and that was an interesting experience. But I did that. I finished it. Tom calls me again. He goes, "Okay, so we've got another one. It's got to be done really fast, and because we need to have a trade collection out before a movie comes out. This is Halloween. The movie's coming out in June. It was the 18th." So I got to write the A-Team, which is I'm super excited because I love the A-Team. I got to write Murdoch and BA. I got to write these two one shots, and it was super. It was great. I had a blast writing them. I was splitting the they split it between me and Chuck Dixon, and he says, "Why don't we just, you know, you write two and I write two, and you know, we both got credited for all four." So I, you know, that worked out for me. It was like I you know, my name was on the stands twice as long as it reasonably should have been. But I had a fun time, and the movie came out during the World Cup and nobody saw it, so I never got to write another 18 comic. At this time, Tom gets the Ghostbusters license under his editorship, and I said, "Tom, I would love to write Ghostbusters. That would be awesome. That is like that out of all the licenses you guys have, that's like my dream gig. It would be good. It would be fun." He goes, "Well, you know, we've got plans for a while." "That's okay. Just let me know when I can pitch something." He goes, "Why don't you come up with something? We'll run it by Sony. We'll get it, you know, pre-approved in case we can do it later." I wrote a pitch. I sent it to him. They gave me some yeses. They gave me some noes. It was ultimately approved. This was during the time when they were doing quarterly holiday-themed one-shots. Yep. And, you know, so I'm just waiting. I forget about everything. Tom calls me up and says, "Hey, we're doing a big crossover called Infestation. Would you like to write the Ghostbusters two-parter?" Yes, I would. I would like that very much. They gave me some. They gave me some criteria of stuff that they wanted included. Figure out a way to make Stay Puft Marshmallow Man a zombie. That was one of the things I had to work in. It was a fun idea, but it was tricky to work out. How is that going to make sense? Figure out a way to make the ghosts vital to a story about zombies. That was another one that was kind of tricky, but I figured out something that, you know, made Ghostbusters sense. And the reaction to that was phenomenal. I never thought I'd get to write another Ghostbusters story after that one. I thought, you know, two issues, that's more than I could hope for. But it went over really well, and Tom asked for me a pitch for an ongoing. Boom, that started, and you know, the buzz he says around the office is, "It's Ghostbusters." They figure it's only going to go four issues, but you know, have a blast. It sold too well to only go four issues. It went 16 issues. We took a break for a real Ghostbusters one shot. We came back. We did another 20 issues. We did a couple of crossovers. We've turned a rotating miniseries. We've been going ever since 2011, and it's been, you know, me, Dan Schoening, Luis Antonio Delgado, pretty consistently for that entire 6 years, which is something else that's kind of unheard of in comics. And I knock wood that I've been so fortunate to work with such a great team for so long, to continue working on it product and a project that I love, and you know, and having a, having a decent reaction from the hardcore fans to casual fans. And you know, I mean, I get my very favorite compliment. I've gotten it two or three times off of this series, and it's, I wasn't into comic books. This lured me in. Now I'm reading all this other stuff. I could not possibly have gotten a higher compliment than that. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten it two or three times. So, I mean, that's just, it's amazing. And, yeah, that's a big roundabout way of explaining how I got paid to do comics. Ta-da!
No, that was perfect.
That's excellent. All
right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very good. Brad, you get to follow up with your question.
Well, now with your story, I'd ask, you know, like you said, you're a writer and artist having that long of a career, or, you know, on the same book together is relatively unheard of now. How often do you actually get together? I mean, I'm not attacking Brainerd, but you kind of are in what might be the middle of Minnesota nowhere.
It's true.
I highly doubt your you know, artist is just down the road in Little Falls. So, you know, how often do you get together?
Dan lives in Victoria, BC, Canada. So he's closer to Seattle, and I've met in person with Dan 5 times since we three San Diego conventions, one Emerald City convention, and one Dragon Con. We have gotten to sit down together face to face and chat. We will Skype every once in a while. Other than that, I will pepper him with emails and ideas. And he'll respond back, I'm too busy thumbnailing, I'll get to this when I can. But we keep in pretty good contact just over email. And I mean, he lives in Victoria, and Luis lives in near Mexico City. So I mean, we're an international crew. Sure. And it's been nice because we sync really well. Our sensibilities are really similar as far as how we approach the material. And I think that's been something that has kept us together for as long as it has, because otherwise, I mean, shoot, he might have gotten bored and run off to do many of the other things that people have been, you know, clamoring on him to do. But he has not, and I thank him for it. But this has given Ghostbusters a visual identity that it hasn't had. I mean, outside of the actors, and this is a book where we can't use the likenesses. So it gives it a visual identity that it hasn't had outside of the cartoon in the 80s, which is nice. I mean, you know, so I mean, it's become the face of a board game now. If I remember right, somebody borrowed Dan's designs slightly and tweaked them a bit for that for the Wii video game a while ago. That's hearsay. I can't prove it. Pretty similar. No, it's a fantastic look that he brings. It. I would love to see it animated. A lot of the readers would love to see it animated. I hope that someday, Sony and Ghost Corps looks at his art and says, you know, that would be a good cartoon, and you know, throw something together and pay Dan a bunch of money and get it up on Netflix or whatever. That would be awesome. But yeah,
and pay you to write the scripts as well.
Yeah, I would. I would love to write the script, but at the same time, I think to myself, you know, don't jinx it, don't say it.
Oh shit! Sorry, we'll take that back. We'll edit that bit.
I'm not editing.
Joshua.
So you mentioned the board game, and I'm a big board gamer, so familiar with that. And so I am just kind of curious, did you have any input when it came to create the board game? Because it's scenario-based. Did they take things from your writing? Were you consulted at all for any portion of that? Or was it pretty much a completely different group of people working on that than...
It was mostly different. I mean, they brought Dan in early to do the designs for the miniatures and such. I came in a little bit later. And basically, all I did was write a nice little story to put in the booklet to kind of set up the game. And I did that for both of the board games. Mm-hmm. They did use characters that we created for the comic book, and they did base some of the mechanics on the characteristics from the stories. So as far as that is concerned, I had a little hand in it in that way, but it was completely indirect. I didn't have Cryptozoic. I was completely responsible for all of the mechanics of the game, all the storytelling, the scenarios. All I did was basically write those stories that were in the book. I would have done more if I'd been asked to do more, but they didn't need me for that stuff. So, you know, I was happy to do what I could to help and put in a little something to those board games. It was fun.
Excellent. Have you had a chance to play either of the, the Ghostbusters board games?
I have them both. I wish I could say I had a chance, because the first one, you can play it by yourself. I just haven't had the time to sit down and run through a half an hour of playing the game. I want to. I'd prefer to play it with my brothers and sisters, who are board game nuts. And I think that's one of the things that I've been holding off on, waiting until I had a chance to sit down with them and play it. But it's something I want to do. But then I always find other things. It's like, oh, you know, I could get ahead on my deadlines. Oh, you know, I could have drawn forever. I could sit down and do a little bit of sketching, because for the most part, I only ever get to sketch anymore at conventions, which it's awesome. But I used to draw, you know, for hours on end daily, and I don't do that anymore, and I miss it. So when I find a little crack of time in my schedule, I'll sit down and do some doodling as opposed to anything else. Although, you know, I mean, I may have a movie on in the background or whatever, but, you know, can't play board game and doodle to the level that I would like without doing terrible on the board game. where are the dice? What happened? We left the table a half an hour ago. Weren't you paying attention? No. You know, that's something that would be, you know, kind of likely for me to happen. Anyway.
Bradley?
Since you talked about it earlier on how you kind of got interested in this, you know, or thought it would try it as your message boards, what is it? Have you looked at your message boards? Because you've taken, you know, you are the lead writer on a much beloved property from two movies. You know, the third one came out recently, and an animated series that ran for a vast majority of my childhood. So, I mean, you have nostalgia seems to be the golden ticket right now that everybody wants to ride. But because of that nostalgia, you're also going to end up with so many people that are be like, those aren't the characters I remember. You did it wrong, you know.
Yeah. You know, for the most part, I did peek in a little bit more at the beginning. I lost my password for the big Ghostbusters site, and I could dig it up again, I'm sure. But I lost it because, you know, I mean, I just poked in and read a bit. For the most part, the consensus, reviewers and fans, they like that I got the voices down, that it sounds like the characters it's supposed to sound like, and you can hear the voices in their head, which was the biggest thing that I was going for from the first page on Ghostbusters Infestation many years ago. That was the thing. I wanted to sound like who it's supposed to sound like, so, you know, if you didn't have any art there, you know who was speaking. That's the goal. After that, you know, there are people who are happy with what we're doing, as far as the plot, and then they're just like, well, it should go this way. It should go this way. Why is Egon and Janine not together? Why is Holtzman and Janine and Egon not together? Why is, you know, I mean, all these things have popped up in weird in weird ways.
That's the fan fiction.
Everybody has their idea of where they think the plot should go, and that's fandom. They haven't been, for the most part, that I've seen, they haven't been jerks about it. So, I mean, that's cool. I love that. You know, I mean, I want to see something. You're not doing quite what I want to see. I like what you're doing, but I'd still like to see this other thing over here. That's cool. That's, again, that's fandom. But, you know, if it turns into the harassment, social media, whatever, you know, you're a moron, you're doing this all wrong, and I hope you, you know, I hope you fall down the stairs and break your neck or whatever, you know what I mean? The cleansed version of things I've seen other writers go through. you know, I mean, then, you know, it just becomes, well, I'm going to ignore you. I just do what occurs to me to do that feels like it makes sense within the universe, and hopefully I'm entertaining myself. Sony's happy, IDW's happy. Hopefully that translates to the fans being happy. So far, it has, for the most part. There are always quibbles. There will always be quibbles no matter what book you're on. you're never going to be able to please everybody all the time, but, you know, I haven't pissed off everybody either, which, you know, is much preferable to pleasing everybody. So
to follow that up, I guess I'll ask another quick one. Maybe not. Since you are answering to, you know, IDW and Sony, do you find that you need your scripts to be done, like, ridiculously far in advance so that Sony's licensing team can then go through them and feel if it's appropriate? I don't know. You know, does, I guess the question maybe in a roundabout way is, what is Sony's licensing team? Do they understand the comic industry? Or do they drag their feet on reviewing your scripts and be like, get back to you like 18 months later? Sure, you guys can print that.
You know, I can't say enough good things about Sony and Ghost Corps. I have had, since I started, 3 notes. That's it. 3 notes.
Wow.
Which is unheard of in comics, licensed comics. 3 notes since I started, and, you know, knock wood, that that continues. But they like what we're doing, and they trust us, and they only come up with a note if there is something major, you know, that looks too much like something else that could be a copyright violation, change it a little, you know, that kind of, you know, for instance, you know, off the top of my head.
Sure.
Or I don't believe Dan's ever gotten that note, but it's the kind of, it's, you know, it's the genre, I guess, of note that we might see. You know, so it's been incredibly easy. They were very clear with us up front before we started what they want and what they didn't want. So we stayed away from what they didn't want and haven't had any trouble.
And
smooth sailing, and I love it.
Following those questions up just a bit too, like, do you have a desire to do creator own stuff? And the reason I ask is, when you create a new ghost or a new monster or a new situation, you know, right? Like, obviously it must belong to Sony or IDW or not to you, right? And so, like, do you ever hold back something, or do you ever regret that, you know, you gave up this really cool ghost that you could have maybe had in something else, or, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, as far as it goes, not really. I do have a desire to do creator-owned stuff, 100%. Again, though, I don't have the time to draw it myself to the level it needs to be drawn, and I don't have the necessary funds all the time to get it paid for with another artist and have it come out in a timely way. Not yet. And, you know, those are the two things, because, I mean, I would feel weird about the, hey, can you do this whole 120 pages, something like that? Can you do it free, up front? You know, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I know how much work goes into that, and I'd feel like a jerk. Some people have offered to do stories in that way, you know, just for, you know, co-ownership back end, you know, just to get some creator-owned stuff. And I still feel guilty. How? But it's true. Anyway, yes, I do have stuff that I would like to do. I do have plans for stuff that I want to do. I have whole situations written down. Some of them are, you know, humorous. Some of them are less so. But as far as Ghostbusters goes, I create things that specifically fit into the universe and wouldn't work the same outside of. If there's a ghost that I create, a ghost with a backstory, well, I mean, it's going to be something that fits into the Ghostbusters universe. If it's something generic, we're going to do Gremlins, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I can do Gremlins in creator-owned. It's not going to be the same kind of Gremlins, and it would be, you know, just as satisfying. So, I mean, I haven't created anything that that would work as well creator-owned as it does in the Ghostbusters. I'm creating specifically for that universe when we make something up. And so, yeah, I don't feel like I'm losing out on anything. Now, If I had something that could fit outside the universe, I might save that, because there's so much I can do with the universe that would only work with the universe. And, you know, I mean, I already have so many ideas and so many things that we've thrown into the book. People are like, when are we going to see more of this? When are we going to see more of that? You've got so many Ghostbusters. I know, we've created a lot, and people have gravitated to favorites, And we don't have enough room to spotlight all those. So, I mean, it's kind of – I mean, we've slowed down on creating new things, although we did come up with something new for the annual that's coming out in a couple of weeks that is fun. And what it was we had a cameo appearance. It was just a one-off, thrown-away gag of a ghost-busting silverback gorilla that did not look like the one from the Filmation Ghostbusters. It would be kind of like a nod, but it wouldn't be a nod. And it was just a background joke. And they said, no, that's too close. So that's one of the things. They just said, it's too close being a gorilla. Mm-hmm. Change it. So we came up with something else and it became a character that now I want to find more uses for. And the character's name is Mike. I won't say anything more about him, but he's got one panel in the entire book, and I want to do like a one shot with him or something. You know what I mean? It's the perfect replacement. It's the perfect thing. It wouldn't work anywhere else but Ghostbusters. Maybe it'd work in Hellboy. It wouldn't work anywhere else but Ghostbusters or Hellboy. And it's going to be fun. I think people are going to get a big kick out of him.
Darren.
Really roundabout way of answering the question.
No, this is great.
If you want to do creator-owned work, yes. I don't give away ideas that would work elsewhere, typically, to the Ghostbusters, because the universe is big enough to support, ideas that only work there.
Well, my impression is this. You know, you're a man who found a love for comics at an early age, clearly has a lot of nostalgia for a particular time period. You must be, you seem to be a big 1980s fan, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're in a really good situation. You know, like people as cool as creator-owned stuff would be and trying to live that dream, I mean, you're being paid to write the Ghostbusters. You know, that's awesome. And it doesn't need to be anything more than that to be really cool. So, you know, I mean, my hat's off to you. I'm impressed. It's cool.
I'm thinking back when you said that. I'm thinking back to all the stuff that I've done and how much of it was 80s based. Okay, I mean, there's Ghostbusters. There was the A-Team. There was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's The Simpsons. There was
Gem and the Holograms.
I didn't get there in the Gem and the Holograms, but I did get on Johnny Bravo. But that was 1990, so it doesn't quite make the
back
cut.
To the Future as well.
And it's just Back to the Future, and boy, it was. It's been neat. I just have fun at my job, and that's. Who doesn't want to have fun at their job?
Jeez,
until
guys
the taxes
left,
come around.
Yeah. You guys left off Silverhawks and Smurfs and
Thundercats.
Yeah, He-Man. Yeah.
Well, Thundercats is Warner Brothers. Silverhawks is Warner Brothers. Smurfs is, I believe, not Fantagraphics, Paper Cuts as the domestic rights for Smurfs. So I can't get everywhere. But what IDW has,
you were able to quickly recite who had the rights. So
you've been looking.
Yeah, I've heard.
We got about 5 minutes left, Darren. Do you have a?
There's a question that came in here from Darren's wife.
Oh, okay.
She wants to know if you believe in ghosts, and I'm going to throw a follow up. If you do, are you not afraid of no ghosts?
I've waffled back and forth on whether or not I believe in the supernatural, but I can tell you one thing is for sure. I would be the biggest fraidy cat of all time, which is part of the reason that I connect so much with this franchise. It's because here's something scary, and now we're going to laugh at it. And I would love the ability to do that, to be able to laugh at something scary. There's a lot of scary things in the world that have nothing to do with ghosts. Yes. I try to deal with it through humor, and it's often very hard. But being able to deal with the stress and anxiety of something that flips that scared switch through humor is something that I connect with. And again, that's the reason I love Ghostbusters. So I would be petrified if I 100% believe in ghosts, which is why I try not to. Although there are times. There are times when, you feel the little chill up the back of your neck and you say, wait a minute, maybe I – it's summer. Why did I feel that the air conditioning is not on? I'm going to go to bed now. Where's my melatonin? I'm going to have some freaky dreams, and hopefully it'll all be well in the morning. So, You know, it's yeah, I don't know whether or not I do or don't, because I have seen rational, sane evidence that disproves, and also some freaky stuff that maybe says maybe. I'm just going to hope I never have to find out for sure, because I don't want to be the one going, ah, and running. I probably would be. Right out the library, right into the street.
So I was going to ask, mine was more of a general Ghostbusters question. Do you collect the Ghostbusters, like, memorabilia and toys? And do you have, like, a thing that's, like, your favorite item or something that you desperately would like to add to your collection?
I didn't used to collect stuff as much as, I mean, yeah, I mean, books, comics, movies. I didn't used to collect toys and memorabilia so much, but I have gotten some pretty cool stuff since I started writing this. I've got the little frumpy looking Venkman statue. That I can't remember. I can't remember the specific toy, but it's staring at me from the top of my computer. You know, he's got the Wallace and Gromit looking expression, okay. And you know what I mean.
Yep.
I got a nice at a charity auction last year. I got a Bill Murray autographed Ghostbusters poster. I kind of nice. You know, geeked out over that.
Yeah.
And you know, I got a few things gifted to me. By Ghost Corps, which were pretty cool. Like, wow. You know, I mean, I got a nice little Funko Pop of Egon riding around in a slime covered Ecto-1. You know, all my brothers and sisters got me the entire run of, here's all the Funko Pops we can buy that have something to do with Ghostbusters. Enjoy finding space for them, buddy. So I mean, it's I've gotten more stuff than I have room for, but I love it all. It's cool, and I know that there's some extra sweet stuff out there that I would love to get my hands on, but I've also seen the price of it.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, you know, ease off there, buddy. You can't justify that one yet. But eventually one day it would be a kick to get a nice little hollow replica proton pack to hang on the wall just to look at. But I mean, I would need to clear away space of original art on the walls, and I'm not ready to do that yet. So it gives me time.
Cool.
Well, let's close out with a couple of plugs. First of all, the DoxCast is we record live on Twitch and Facebook, and we post episodes every Monday. We've done over 200 episodes now, and we're really starting to take a focus of trying to do interviews and guests, because we're just a bunch of nerds and we love listening to nerds. So. So that's available on iTunes or on our website. Eric, what's coming up for Ghostbusters, and how do people find it and find you?
All right. Well, the very next thing coming up for Ghostbusters is the 2018 annual. It's a 40-page annual that Dan, Luis, and I all did, as opposed to a book full of a bunch of short stories. That'll be out on the 28th here in a couple of weeks. And it is a kind of a lead-in to the 8-issue event we have starting next month in March, which is Crossing Over. And there's still a couple of weeks, I believe, that people can order number one. It's going to be different than people are expecting. It is going to be a crossover. It is going to feature all of the Ghostbusters we've seen that wear proton packs. But at the same time, it has a little bit of an intimate story, and I don't want to give too much of it away yet. So it's not what people are expecting it to be. So I'm looking forward to seeing the reaction when it actually comes out. The first issue has just been finished and should be going out to retailers here pretty quick to get a look at, to see what kind of nonsense we're cooking up. So that is that's this month for the annual, next month for number one for Crossing Over. That's running for 8 issues, and that's it for Ghostbusters. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at Eric Burnham, which is ERIKBURNHAM. Somehow people will screw up either the first name or the last name, which is why I have to spell it, and why I don't use ericburnham.com for my website. I thought, I'll use something else. I'll use a crazy portmanteau. That will be easier. It's up in the air, but that is burnhamania.com. Which is Burnham, and then ANIA. So,
oh, yeah.
But yeah, those are the places you can find me. The Vernamania website will link to everywhere else I can be found on the internet, but Twitter is where I am most often active. Whether or not that's a good thing for my sanity is, again, up in the air.
I'm not going to lie. I think my favorite thing about you is your love of puns. So.
Yes, it's it is the most fun that I have, and I have delighted in throwing out some weird ones lately. I can't even remember which one it was, but I posted it on Twitter and immediately I got back, "You're fired." So that's great. It was somebody who had never hired me, so I felt secure. But still, I get plenty of get outs, and I get, you know, no. So I mean, it's I know they're working. I know that they're, you know, firing on all cylinders. When I get an immediate reaction, that is just stop, no, cut, nah. But yes, the puns are. The puns are fun, and my favorite pun in Ghostbusters, just because now it's popped into the top of my head, was a little bit of a thinker, but it was in the first Ninja Turtles crossover that we did, and I was having Peter Venkman. He was talking to Raphael, and he was saying that if Donatello spent too much time with Egon, you know, the next thing you know, there'd be some trepanation. And Raphael asked what trepanation was. Peter said, "It's a little boring, actually." So I was really proud of that joke, even though it needed to be looked up by too many people. Still, it is the best kind of puns. Pun where you have to go, "Wait, what?" Look it up. Oh, God, no, that's awful. That's terrible. Oh, I live for them. They give me energy. They give me life. They allow me to continue doing what I do.
Well, I loved when you said, you know, one thing we always wonder about is what amount of yourself you put into the comics. And I think, like, when you said, you know, like, I get to laugh in the face of what's scary, or I get to laugh, you know, make it silly. I think that was awesome. So,
yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us on the DoxCast, and we'll let you know when this episode pops up, and hopefully we can have you back in the future as well.
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you, Eric. Yeah. I really do appreciate you coming on. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me. I'd love to be back as soon as, you know, I can be assured that I'll still have a career after some of these puns make it out.
You certainly will. I'll be buying your books. Don't worry. And commissioning.
And apparently doing commissions.
And commissioning more artwork from you too. So.
Eric, stick around for just a second, but everybody else, we will see you or talk to you next time on the DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time, Deacon.